Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, we'll be joined by John Russell, Brian Lynn, Jill Robbins, and Anna Mateo. John will tell us about a food company that wants to save turtles from turtle soup. Then Brian tells us about a company working to connect two Texas cities with driverless trucks. Afterward, Jill joins me for a story about the results of college students calling for their universities to divest from Israel and what divestment means. Then, Anna Mateo brings a fishing net to this week's Words and Their Stories. Now, here's John.
Chilean food company Natco has been working on a popular meal for people in Latin America and Asia, turtle soup. The meal tastes like turtle soup, but has no parts of the creature in it. The company says it uses artificial intelligence, or AI, to create the food. It hopes to raise awareness about the endangered reptile. Bernardo Moltedo leads the science behind the effort for Natco. He used the term impact, meaning an effect or change, to describe the effort. Moltedo added, "We have been working on this for several years. We always ask ourselves, why not? That's why we ended up working to help endangered species, as is the case with turtle soup." Natco uses an AI program to help it decide what to use. The program examined 300,000 plants and made 260 quintillion combinations until it found a mix of 5 proteins that most closely reproduced the taste of turtle meat. For now, neither the plant-based turtle meat nor the soup are for sale. But the company plans on holding an online class to teach people how to prepare the soup. With a presence in 12 countries, Natco creates foods such as hamburgers, milk, mayonnaise, or ice cream from plants. These food creations have a similar taste and texture to foods prepared with traditional animal-based ingredients. Green turtles, traditionally used in turtle soup, are on the International Union for Conservation of Nature's Red List of Endangered Species. The creature's numbers are affected by pollution, extreme weather, and fishing. The exploitation of these sea turtles is prohibited in most countries in the world. However, turtle soup remains in high demand in countries throughout Asia and Latin America, including China, Mexico, Peru, Malaysia, and others. I'm John Russell.
An American company is preparing to launch a series of driverless trucks to transport goods on a major public highway. Aurora Innovation says It plans to begin the service later this year in Texas with 20 tractor trailers. The trucks will drive back and forth to transport goods between the cities of Dallas and Houston. The Pittsburgh-based company says it hopes to expand the service to thousands of tractor trailers within 3 to 4 years. Aurora says the transportation method could operate 24 hours a day. It aims to speed up the process and possibly save on transportation costs. Aurora will continue testing for the next 9 months. If all goes well, the driverless program will begin after that. At first, the trucks will be carrying loads for FedEx and other transportation partners between the company's processing centers. Since 2021, Aurora trucks have autonomously carried goods over 1 million kilometers on public roads. But those vehicles all had human safety drivers sitting inside. The company said there have been 3 crashes involving those trucks. And it said all of the crashes were the result of mistakes by human drivers of other vehicles. The crashes were minor and no one was hurt in them. And in each case, the company said, the Aurora truck was able to safely pull off to the side of the road. Federal records that began in June 2021 show at least 13 crashes with other vehicles involving autonomous tractor trailers. In all of those cases, the crashes were caused by other vehicles changing lanes or hitting trucks from behind. Sometimes human safety drivers took over just before the crash. Progress in the U.S. on driverless or autonomous technology has slowed in recent years. Several companies had already made plans to launch self-driving taxi services in major cities, but those efforts have repeatedly faced delays. A robo-taxi service developed by General Motors called Cruise has struggled after one of its vehicles suffered a serious crash. And Alphabet's Waymo is facing opposition to expanding its autonomous rider service in California. Safety groups have warned that with almost no federal rules covering autonomous vehicles, it will largely be up to companies themselves to decide when their vehicles are safe enough to operate without humans. Critics say government agencies, including the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, could be doing more to ensure the safety of such programs. They point out that often safety is only examined and new rules enacted after crashes happen. But Aurora and other companies argue that years of testing demonstrate that their trucks will actually be safer than human-driven ones. They note that the vehicle's laser and radar sensors can see farther than any human eyes can. And the trucks never get tired like humans do. They also are not affected by alcohol or drugs. We want to be out there with thousands or tens of thousands of trucks on the road, said Aurora Chief Chris Urmson. And to do that, we have to be safe, he said. It's the only way that the public will accept it. Urmson, who spoke to the Associated Press, is the former head of Google's autonomous vehicle operations. Phil Koopman is a professor at Carnegie Mellon University who studies driverless vehicle safety. He told the AP he agrees that self-driving trucks can theoretically be safer than human-driven ones. But he warned that the vehicle's computers will at times make errors. Koopman said the truck's actual performance will depend on the quality of their safety engineering. With billions of dollars in investments, Koopman said he wonders how autonomous transportation companies will balance safety decisions against cost concerns. "Everything I see indicates they're trying to do the right thing, but the devil is in the details," he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Student protesters at Columbia University in New York City, the University of California, Berkeley, Brown University in Rhode Island, and others are calling on their leaders to divest from Israel. That means the students want their universities to sell any investments in Israeli businesses. Students have also started to ask their universities to divest from any U.S. company that does business in Israel. That includes companies that produce weapons and aircraft that can be used in war, such as Boeing and Lockheed Martin. In addition, some protesters say schools should end investments in technology companies such as Google and Airbnb that do business in Israel. For weeks, protesters have been calling for the war between Hamas and Israel to end. The war started in 2023 after Hamas fighters invaded Israel and killed about 1,200 people and took hostages. Israel's military fight against Hamas has killed more than 34,500 Palestinians, Hamas's health ministry said. Protesters began calling for divestment from Israel in the months following the start of the war. At Columbia, a group calling itself Columbia University Apartheid Divest, or CUAD, published demands. CUAD has demanded that the university divest all of Columbia's finances, including the endowment, from companies and institutions that profit from Israeli apartheid, genocide, and occupation in Palestine, ensure accountability by increasing transparency around financial investments. An endowment is a special organization that invests money for the school that creates it. The people who work for it have a legal responsibility to invest the money wisely. The gains are supposed to pay for improvements to the school grounds, new buildings, and to provide financial aid for students. Some universities are agreeing to consider changing the way they invest money in their endowments. Others are not. On April 30th at Brown, leaders said they would discuss and vote on selling investments related to Israel's fighting in Gaza if the protesters left their encampment. The protesters agreed. One student group at Brown, the Brown Divest Coalition, posted a message on Instagram celebrating the deal. This would not have been possible without the hard work of university encampments across the country whose collective power has forced university administrators to acknowledge the overwhelming support for Palestine.
At the University of California, Berkeley, the BDS Coalition demanded the total divestment of the UC Berkeley Foundation and the UC General Endowment Pool from the Israeli state and from all companies profiting from the colonization of Palestine. But on April 26th, the University of California said it would not change its investments. A statement said, "The University of California has consistently opposed calls for boycott against and divestment from Israel. At Columbia, the place that many see as the starting point of the protests that spread across the U.S., the university offered to talk with protesters. Columbia said it would publish a list of the school's direct investments and increase how often the list is updated. The school's investing committee said it would consider proposals from students. Students involved in recent protests point to similar calls for divestment from South Africa that started in the 1980s. At the time, South Africa was a segregated country living under what was known as apartheid. Civil rights activists point to economic pressure around the world, some of which came from universities, as a main reason for the end of the policy in the 1990s. But some business and education experts note that university endowments are more sophisticated than they were back then. The Department of Education's National Center for Education Statistics reported that the combined market value of the 20 largest U.S. university endowments totaled more than $927 billion at the end of 2021. Much of the money in endowments is overseen by financial professionals who have permission to buy and sell stocks or groups of stocks.
Because of this, it can be difficult to identify a school's involvement with a company. George Dyer is executive director and co-founder of the Intentional Endowments Network. It's not as simple as some people think. Maybe it's just selling some stocks at a certain company, Dyer said. Financial experts also note that a small number of universities, removing their investments in a few large companies such as Boeing or Microsoft, will not make much difference. Todd Ely is an associate professor in the School of Public Affairs at the University of Colorado, Denver. He said, some schools likely have employed financial companies to supervise their investments, and colleges and universities have fairly limited discretion in the actual investments. Donnie Bahar and Natan Sachs of the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C., have done research on divestment. They noted that divestment movements have had little effect on the Israeli economy. In their writing, they note that only official restrictions or sanctions by the United States would produce economic pressure to change Israeli policy. But that is not likely to happen because of U.S. support for Israel.
Just on Thursday, President Joe Biden talked about his support for the protesters' right to express themselves, but said the U.S. does not plan to end its support for Israel's fight against Hamas. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
Thanks for that report, Dan and Jill. Dan joins me now to talk a little bit more about the financial side of the protests that have been going on at universities around the U.S. Welcome, Dan.
Thanks, Katie. Happy to be here.
Dan, our listeners know we have covered this story about the campus protests over the last 2 weeks. First, we told them about the universities and their concerns that upcoming end-of-the-year events would be disrupted. Then we heard about police arresting students for violating city and school rules. Now we have heard about students demanding that their universities change the way they invest their money.
That's right, Katie.
On the last part, do you think the students' demand of divestment will affect what is going on in the war between Israel and Hamas?
The article says legislation and political pressure is really the best way to effect change. So if the students want change, they should probably talk to corporate leaders and lawmakers if they can.
Thanks, Dan.
You're welcome, Katie. Happy to help.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Sometimes in life, you may want to have as many choices as possible. For example, let's say you need a new job. You want to look far and wide. You do not want to limit your options. In this situation, you may want to cast a wide net. Casting a wide net means to search a very wide area. To cast a wide net is an expression that probably comes from fishing. For some types of fishing, you attach a hook to a line on a fishing pole. Then you cast the hook into the water. This will only catch one fish. However, casting a net into the water can catch many fish. When you cast a wide net, you might search a wider area, or you might aim to catch something bigger. For example, if someone looks for a partner, he might cast a wide net by searching the world. He might be willing to move anywhere. He would have no limits to where he might go. People who cast a wide net want to have many choices or options. They broaden their search or widen the qualities they are willing to accept. There are many related expressions that describe similar ideas. One is to cast your net wide. Others include considering all options or exploring all opportunities. Casting a wide net also means you leave no stone unturned. You look thoroughly. You search high and low for what you want. Now, let's hear this expression used in two discussions. The first is at work.
So, how's the search going for a web designer?
Surprisingly, it's going slowly. So far, only 5 applicants have responded to the job announcement.
5? In this job market? I thought resumes would have been pouring in.
Well, I only sent the job advertisement to 1 employment agency.
That's not enough. We need to cast a really wide net this time.
Right, I'm on it. I'll be casting a really wide net today.
Now, let's hear 2 friends use the same expression.
So how is your online dating search going?
Not well. It's difficult to find the perfect partner.
Well, no one is perfect. What qualities are you looking for?
I'm looking for a person who is tall, 1.9 meters or taller, with a good job, but not in politics or acting. And they must have a master's degree.
The height and job criteria might be a bit limiting.
Oh, I'm not done. They must also live within 10 kilometers of me, love dogs, big dogs, and they can't be a smoker. Oh, they must be active outdoors, but especially with water skiing and rock climbing. Oh, and they must be a vegetarian.
I think if you want to meet more people and have more options, you may want to cast a wider net.
Maybe you're right. I know. I'll take off the dog criteria. If they like cats, I guess that's okay. Do you have a similar expression in your language? Let us know in the comments section. Or send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Thanks, Anna. We'll be back in just a moment to hear a little bit more about this interesting English phrase.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English Podcast. You know, I have not gone fishing in a long time, so it's a good thing Anna Mateo is here now to talk with us about fishing. Hi, Anna.
Hello, Dan. But you know, we are really not talking about fishing. We are talking today about the saying, to cast a wide net. Although its origin does come from fishing.
See? So we are talking about fishing.
Well, sure, if that makes you happy, Dan. We can say we're talking about fishing.
Thanks. I'm happy now. But I really have a smile because of this saying. I enjoyed this week's words and their stories. It makes me think of a friend I have back in Cleveland.
Oh, yeah? Why is that?
Well, you gave us the scenario of two friends talking about online dating.
Ah, yes. Let me guess. Your friend is being, perhaps, a little picky?
That's right. She is very tall for a woman, about 1.8 meters. So, she's looking for a man who is taller. And a number of other things, too. She is a really nice person, so I hope she finds someone.
Well, we do have another fish expression that deals with relationships. Let's say she meets someone, but it doesn't work out. You can say to her, "Don't worry, there are other fish in the sea." This means she has many choices. But for now, to help her meet more people and have more relationship options, you should tell her about this episode of Words and Their Stories. Maybe she will be inspired to cast a wider net.
That's a good idea. I'll do that. I'll also suggest she go fishing. She lives by a very large lake, after all. Maybe instead of a fish, she will catch a fisherman.
Ah, good one, Dan. Well, for her sake, I hope you're right. Fishing could be a good activity for a date. There is a lot of time for talking and getting to know each other while being outside.
You're right. Okay, well, I've got to go. I'm going to call her right now and tell her to go fishing soon. I bet she will catch a good one, either a fish or a date. Thanks, Anna.
You are very welcome, Dan. Talk to you soon. And best of luck to your friend.
It's always great to have Anna on the show, isn't it? Today, we also heard from John Russell. He brought us the story about how technology and artificial intelligence is helping to save turtles from turtle soup. Brian Lynn joined us to tell about driverless trucks traveling between Houston and Dallas in Texas. How would you feel about seeing one of those trucks pass you going 120 kilometers per hour? Then, Jill Robbins and I brought you the Higher Education Report about the effects of divestment. Thanks to Jill, Anna, John, Brian, and all our VOA colleagues for their help on today's program.
Most importantly, thank you for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
You can find more from Anna, Ashley, and everyone else on Instagram. Be sure to visit us at VOA Learning English. And we hope you join us for tomorrow's podcast, too. Dan Novak will bring you arts, culture, and science stories from around the world, including Brian Lynn's report on a recent laser communication experiment by NASA. I'm Dan Friedel.